Sure, I just kind of gave you an overview of what we're going to see in this course. We talked about kind of general definitions within machine learning and kind of talked about why it's useful to use it within many body physics. We also talked about different types of machine learning. And so today I want to talk about an actual example of a supervised learning algorithm. And in doing so, we're going to discuss a method for parameter optimization called gradient descent, which will be useful today, but also in other methods that we study within this course. And if we have time, we'll maybe look at another algorithm in supervised learning called k-nearest neighbors. This is actually a very, very simple algorithm, and you know, pedagogically, it would normally probably come before linear regression. But just because we need linear regression in the tutorial, we'll just start there, just in case we don't have time for both today. I've just put a couple of references. They're also on the portal that are useful for linear regression. So the first is an archive paper that talks about machine learning methods within the physical sciences. And the second one is a U of T course. This course is not within physics, but it's a general machine learning course, and they have some nice lecture slides there that you can look at. So in particular, lecture 6 is useful for linear regression. And so I don't think I need to spend too much time reminding you about these definitions, because it was only an hour and a half ago that I was introducing it. But let me just really quickly remind you of the main points that we need to have to define a supervised learning problem. So we have a data set that consists of data points. We have to have some labels. And what we want to do is define some function, usually with some parameters that we'll tune. And we want to fit that to our labels y. So that function is going to take us from the d-dimensional space of our input data points to a label with dimension dy. OK, so let's talk now about specifically how the algorithm works and what assumptions we make if we're doing linear regression. So every algorithm, as I said, is basically about defining this function. And in this case, all that we're going to do is have some linear coefficients w that we'll put in front of each component of our data points. And this w is just our fitting parameters here. So let me note, we can of course use this also for cases where our labels have more than one component, but it's just, you know, we just straightforwardly add another dimension to all of the matrices here. So I'm just going to present this for the case where you just have one component of your label. So what we're going to have to do is, in addition to considering the different components of each data point, we're also going to have to consider many different samples of data. So let me introduce some new notation of how we're going to consider many samples. So we know how we define the number of components, but we're also going to have many data points that have those components. So let m, we're going to say m is the number of data points that we have. And I'm going to use this superscript with an I in brackets when I'm talking about the I sample I. Okay, and now that I've done that, I can define a matrix to store all of my data in one place. So in this case, the rows are going to index which sample I'm looking at, and the columns are going to look at the different components of each data point. And then now my label vector now, rather than, because I'm just going to assume there's only one component, now my label vector is going to index just my different samples, because there's just one component for each one. So again, just notation here. So the way that we determine these parameters is we try to look at the output that we're going to get for a given set of fitting parameters that we choose for this function, and we're going to have to consider the difference from the true label that we know. And we want to do some kind of averaging over all samples that we have. And so, again, I just take the output from this function f of x, and I'm going to look at how much it differs from the label that I want. And this is basically, this is called just the L2 norm here. Let me write that just smaller so I don't lose so much space. Okay, does it make sense why we would want to minimize this? How if this is zero, it means we have a perfect function that represents our data points? Yeah? Okay, great. So the next step then is to find what linear regression would assign to these parameters. So what we do is what we want to optimize is over all possible values of these W parameters that we could choose, which one gives me the minimum value of this L. And I show you a few steps of how you can do this in the notes. But it turns out that for linear regression, you can actually get an exact solution for these parameters. So if you solve this equation, you're going to find that this is exactly what we would want to choose for our parameters. In a lot of the methods that we're going to study moving forward, like in neural networks, we're not going to be able to find a nice equation like this that we can actually evaluate for some reasonable cases. But here we can actually find this exact solution. So this is, for a linear regression, what we would find. One thing that we're going to delve into a little bit in the tutorial is the fact that, of course, this matrix has to be invertible for us to get meaningful results here. So if that matrix is not invertible, we just have many possible ways that we could define these parameters. OK, any questions so far? Yeah? Yeah, sorry. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I know I try to write it more like a W because I know sometimes my W's look like omegas. Thank you. No, they're all supposed to be W's. It's just that here I caught myself that, oh, that looks like an omega instead. So they're all, let me try to fix that for you. Yeah, thanks. I know you'll find in this course there's so much notation because in some models there's so many parameters. So it's good you call me out on that because yeah, we want to make sure that's really clear. Yeah. Okay, I'm not up there. I think they look a bit more like W, so they're also there's no omegas here. Let me just say that. Yeah, yeah. Anything else? Okay, so in this case, we see we can build this matrix. We can invert it. We could get an exact solution. But we're going to do this in the tutorial. I'm going to have you code this, and you're going to look at the solutions there. But we're also going to still use this linear regression algorithm, but using something called gradient descent. Did you learn about gradient descent in numerical methods course?
No.
No? OK. No worries. OK. You might have seen it within some cases there with a different name or something. OK, so we're going to use something called gradient descent. Now, I don't know if any of you are asking yourself this question, but I did in the past when I was learning this. Why would we bother using another algorithm if we already have the exact solution? Now, I know I haven't really told you much about this algorithm yet. The idea is that it's going to search for parameters, but it's not going to employ this exact solution. I guess I'm wondering, without knowing what this algorithm is, can you think of any reason why it would be maybe useful to search for a solution in a way other than solving this? Yeah?
Is it because inverting that matrix takes a lot of computational?
Yeah, exactly. So in some cases, it can be really inefficient to build that whole matrix. That's one thing. Yeah, so exactly. That's actually another thing we'll look at on the tutorial, is kind of how do we find in a certain setup, how do we find kind of the boundary of where it's kind of more efficient to use this exact solution and when we should use something like gradient descent. But kind of a more second pedagogical reason to learn this is that we're going to use gradient descent and some of its variants within many algorithms that we study in this course. So today I'm going to talk about it somewhat in the context of linear regression, and that's how we'll use it in the tutorial, but it's going to be used within many algorithms, such as the neural networks that we're going to start looking at next lecture. So it's worth talking about. Okay, so far we've been talking about linear regression. Let me just clarify one more time. I'm going to kind of now talk about something more general, because gradient descent is not just useful there. So kind of still have linear regression in your mind as an example, but not as the only example. So again, we're going to assume we want to minimize some kind of a function in order to solve our problem. And we have some tunable parameters. We have lowercase n of them. And so we basically want to solve this equation for each parameter that we have. And so let me just note that for linear regression, you have one parameter for every component of your data point. But we're going to look at other algorithms where this n doesn't have to have the same relationship with your data set. So that's one sense in which this is a little more general. Okay. So, of course, if we have many parameters, and so L can depend on n objects, if n gets very large, it's not easy for me to visualize the whole thing. But let me just kind of imagine a case where I'm projecting kind of a certain subplane onto one and looking at how it depends on one parameter. Imagine I have some landscape. So this might be the function that I want to minimize. And of course, as I said, it's more complicated. It's actually multidimensional. But let's just consider this in this example that I can draw. So, you know, maybe I'm going to start my algorithm with just some random parameters. And maybe that's going to mean that I start, let's say, like over here. And this is the solution that I actually want to find. So the idea is what we want to do is kind of look at the shape of this curve and its slope and take small steps in order to let us eventually reach this minimum. So we know what our parameters are at our starting point. We don't know what the minimum is, but what I can do is I can evaluate this function. And what I want to try to figure out is kind of the slope at exactly that point where I start. And just using a first order approximation, I can write this like this. And I'm still going to show you exactly how we, what we're going to do from here. But again, because there's lots of notation, let me just be really clear here. Okay, so this is an approximation that I can make if I'm looking at a sufficiently local region. In most cases, unless I have some crazy discontinuity here. So I'm going to assume this. Now, what do we do from here? So what do we actually want? We want to find a minimum. So what do I want to have for delta L here? I want to make sure that I'm taking a step so that that L decreases, right? So delta L, we want it to be negative. So, and let me just emphasize, we can choose these parameters however we want. Of course, we want to choose them so that we find a minimum eventually. But those are things that we get to choose along each step of the algorithm. Right, I shouldn't say we, gradient descent gets to choose. So we want to have this change in L be negative. So again, there's many ways that we could choose to update these W's, but with this approximation, we're going to choose to do it in a way that our function is going to decrease if this approximation is valid. Okay, so this is what is meant by gradient descent. It means that we're going to choose to update our parameters based on the gradients of this function L with this factor outside. And so this eta is, we're going to always restrict it to be positive, but it's a parameter that we actually get to choose when we define this algorithm. So this is called a hyperparameter. So by that, I mean something that's defined within the algorithm. It's not something that we're tuning depending on the performance and how our data set behaves. It's something we choose in the beginning. But we can choose different values for this eta parameter. Does anyone see what's going to happen as I increase or decrease this parameter? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's basically like the step size that I'm taking in there. Yeah, perfect. Yeah. So if this is the way that I choose to define the changes in my parameters, then what I'm going to have is that this change in L is negative, which is what I want. But of course, this is making the assumption that this first order approximation is valid. So as we kind of said already, this approximation is going to be valid if I take very small steps, then I'm going to be in the limit where this eta is very small. This will be good, but can anyone see any problems with taking this too small? Yeah.
It would take a lot longer.
Yeah. And it could also get stuck, right? Like there's some local minima along the way. If I'm only taking these really tiny steps all the time, it could also get stuck in local minima, right? Yeah, perfect. So, you know, we might think that it's great to take this very small, and, you know, that might be great in some cases where you have infinite time, which, but of course we want to push the boundaries of what we can study, and so we want to make sure that we also can converge to a solution in a reasonable amount of time and also not get stuck. But there's a balance here, obviously, because we also need this eta to be small enough that this first order approximation is valid. Otherwise, we could totally miss minima and just be jumping around all over the place and never find a solution either. And kind of as we said, if we choose something small enough, it will eventually find a solution. But again, eventually can be a very long time. And that could be just a local minima, not necessarily the global one that we are looking for. Does anyone have any thoughts just looking at this right away? Is it a good idea to have this eta just be constant? Do you think this is the definition of the very simplest type of gradient descent. But another thing you can do is just kind of modify how this eta changes as you continue training on your data, so as you keep taking steps. Does anyone have thoughts on kind of what you would propose for how this learning rate should maybe change? You know, I take one step. When I start out, I'm at some very random point.
For example, if you get close because you're getting closer to minimum, you're expected to be closer Because you don't want to overshoot at some point with a decay
right.
rate.
Yeah, exactly.
Or because you don't want it to be susceptible to every single step that it takes, you could put a momentum in.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Okay, cool. So you guys have, is this something you have learned about just like from your own studying already? It's like momentum idea of adding it in?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Have you implemented that before?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, nice. Have other people heard about this idea of adding momentum to a learning rate before? Okay, cool. Yeah, so I was gonna talk about that a little bit later, but that's cool. Yeah, so exactly. There's lots of things that you can do to modify this so that it's kind of a little bit more intelligent or aware of kind of the landscape in a way. And we're gonna see in the tutorial today, if you just fix this to be a constant, it can find solutions, but it's gonna do a lot better if you add this decay to your learning rate, as you've said. So great.
Can you do better with this either?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Well, already the W depends on the delta L. I'm trying to remember exactly the definition of what it means to add momentum. I think that actually might depend on the gradient in some way. Yeah, let me just, we're going to talk about this in more detail, how to modify this in another lecture. But yeah, I think you're right that this is like essentially what it boils down to. But I don't want to say something wrong. So yeah, let me come back to that. That's a good question. Other questions here? Okay, so this is the algorithm that we're going to study in detail in the tutorial this afternoon. And just to remind you, the case that we're going to look at is the Ising model, and in particular doing regression in order to learn the energy. So it'll be a continuous fitting problem where we're trying to learn the energy of that model, and we're going to study various properties of how to do that fitting with this algorithm. So, let's just talk about one more supervised learning algorithm, because let me just say, in the past when I taught this course, I kind of jumped right into neural networks, but now I kind of like to spend just a little bit of time at the beginning talking about some of these other supervised learning methods, because depending on your data, there's other algorithms that can be helpful too, so it's kind of nice to just quickly talk about some other nice, and in this case especially, this one's a really, really simple algorithm that you might be able to use in some situations too. So this one is called k-nearest neighbors. In this case, so in this case, remember that we're going to be looking at, you know, some data set where we know our labels, but then we want to kind of consider the case where we put a more general input into this function. And what are we going to choose as its output? The idea, maybe we can even tell just from the title, the idea is that we're just going to look at the k points that are nearest to that point in order to determine that. And I think it's just good practice to think about kind of how you actually decompose that into steps that you would code. So So the first thing we would do is just calculate the distance from our point that we have to all other points that are in our data set. So we'll find the k points that are closest to this. We'll call these all x star. There'll be k of them. And their labels we'll store like this too. And then the way that we're going to choose the output of this function, it's just going to depend on whether we have a discrete or continuous data set, so classification or regression. So if it's classification, I have this set of labels from my closest k points. How do you think I could choose the value of what this function will be in that case? I look at the k points that are closest to this x input. They all have some discrete values. Like maybe I can draw something. This is like, let's say I have a two-component data set, x1, x2, and these are, this is label one, and maybe my labels, this is my other label. So I have two possible labels, maybe circles and stars. If my new x is here, what would you choose? Would you say it's probably a circle or a star? Right, yeah. And how did you make that decision? How would you explain how you chose that? Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so in this case, it's obvious, right? Everything closest to it is a circle, so that's probably a pretty obvious choice. What if you're here? What do you think you would choose?
Visually, it's hard to tell because it looks like
exactly, yeah. So how would you go about like designing code that would make that decision?
So you would count all of the k neighbors, and then if the majority of them are
Yeah, exactly. You'd probably look at the majority, or you know, if it's the same number, you'd maybe just like flip a coin to make the decision, right? So you could do the majority rule. You could probably also do some like weighted probability to make the decision. But yeah, perfect. Probably you would look at the majority member of that group. We instead have a regression problem. We'll instead, likely what we could choose to do would be to take the average in this case. Okay. So let me move back over here for a sec. Okay, so There is one so-called hyperparameter within this algorithm. Again, by hyperparameter, we mean something that we choose at the start before we process the data, and we don't modify it based on our data. So in this case, the hyperparameter is k, the k that's referred to in the k nearest neighbor. So, you know, usually our i's and j's are just indices here, but here this k is actually something. Sorry, these are supposed to be k's, not m's. This k is the hyperparameter of this model that we choose, so how many points we look at to make our decision. Okay, and maybe let's just quickly have a discussion. Does it seem obvious from the beginning kind of what would be an ideal choice of this k, how you would go about choosing how many neighbors you would look at, or just any kind of rules you would have in mind to do that? Or just any considerations you would think about? How to choose the number k. So k is the number of points that you're going to look at to make this decision. Again, it's a hyperparameter, so it's something you might vary.
Is it sort of like there's a trade-off between having a larger number and taking more computational resources at a smaller number, having less accuracy?
I think that's that's an interesting factor. That could be a small factor for sure. But so in your let's pretend that we don't have to worry about efficiency just for a second. But of course we do, but let's say we don't. So would you say it's best to just take as many points as possible?
No, because you still don't want to go too far out from the point you're at, because if all the points of one kind are clustered in one area and you just go everywhere, you're getting stuff that's too far off.
Yeah, exactly, because in this algorithm you kind of just consider all of the distances equally. So, you know, the first few k are maybe pretty close, and that's good, but you maybe don't want to take too many. But if you take too few, you know, you can be largely affected by the noise that you have in your data set, right? So yeah, so there's a trade-off here. I'm not able to say exactly what number you should try. Obviously, it's going to depend a lot on different properties of your data. Yeah. But let me just note that this is a hyperparameter that you choose from the beginning, and then this algorithm actually has no fitting parameters. So this is a reason why it's often one of the first algorithms you would think of and you would teach in supervised learning, because it's there's nothing that you actually fit along the way. Once you have your data set and you choose this k parameter, your result is just determined. Okay, so again, this was just kind of this last part is an algorithm we're not going to be coding today, but just to show you that some supervised learning algorithms can actually be very straightforward and simple, and next time we're going to move on to talking about neural networks. Let me also just tell you a few other supervised learning algorithms. I'll just kind of say the names in case you've heard about them and just want to know what category they fit into. So there's decision trees, there's logistic regression, there's support vector machines, which I'm still considering coming back to later in the course if we have time, because there's some interesting analysis you can do there in many body systems. And then, of course, a large focus of this course is going to be how to use different types of neural networks to do supervised learning, and so that's what we're going to start next time. But you know, even though we're not going to, in other courses they'll spend a lot of time going through each of these. If you look at some of those references I put in the beginning, they're going to have sections on each of these. So if you're interested and you kind of have a data set, you're not sure how complicated of an algorithm you need in order to study it, you might actually start with some of these algorithms first. So I think it's worth mentioning. But then, yeah, we're going to spend several lectures talking about neural networks and how to use them and train them. OK, so we're done a little bit early, but does anyone have any questions? Yeah.
I'm just asking if you can about it.
That's okay.
Like using decision trees or industry regression or whatever. I don't think people use these anymore that much, right? And
right.
With it, the only reason that I can think of that people might still use these would be because they're more clear than what is happening in neural networks.
What do you mean by clear?
Because, I mean, the black box problem in neural networks. But because if their problem was to make their problem more accurate, the solution more accurate, I think you can't do better than neural networks.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah, so this is exactly why, like, I've taught this course a few times, and I used to just jump right here, because I think a lot of the research you're going to see right now is going to be using neural networks. There's not, in the context of many body physics, there's not many papers coming out these days where they're going to talk about k-nearest neighbors or linear regression and these things. But as you kind of alluded to, the benefit of these algorithms is that they're more interpretable. So I can get a result, and it's maybe easier to visualize or study the parameters and study how those parameters depend on various aspects of my data set. And so there are situations where, you know, it's beneficial to be able to do that. And, you know, maybe, I guess it maybe more speaks to just this general idea that if you have a data set you're trying to study, you don't necessarily just want to jump to the most sophisticated black box algorithm right away, right? Like sometimes you can do some preliminary analysis on these. Of course, that's not always going to be the case. If you're an expert in a certain field, you're maybe not going to waste your time using linear regression. But I think it's interesting that, you know, today we're going to study a problem where we actually can use that. And throughout this course, we're going to see how some of those really simple algorithms actually can work on certain data sets. And again, the big benefit is that you can get some physical insight out of the results that you can't get from neural networks. Yeah, good question. Do you agree? Or you can push back if you want.
No.
Okay. I'm always open to debate if you don't agree. It seems like this, you know, I think every year that I teach this course, the audience has like a bit more baseline familiarity with machine learning, which makes sense because it's just getting more and more popular throughout the years. So yeah, I'm definitely happy to have you all of your inputs as well as we discuss things. Yeah.
So for the k-nearest neighbors, I assume that we're just calculating some distance and we're just looking at the k-nearest neighbors. Is there some other algorithm you could do where it's like you like maybe weight how likely it is something will be classified one way or another based on how far it is, so if things are further away, they like wouldn't.
Yeah, that's really, I was actually, just as I was writing this out, I was thinking the same thing. And I'm sure this should definitely be possible. I don't know what that's called, or maybe that's still just called k-nearest neighbors or a weighted k-nearest neighbors or something like that. But yeah, that's definitely seems like a good idea, I would say. Like if you have a case where three points are all very close, you know, maybe you want to keep considering points until you get one that's pretty far or something like that. That seems like makes a lot of sense. Any other questions? Yeah.
So are new works more, I guess, more popular now because of a more human factor, fashion and stuff like that, or are there like mathematical theorems that guarantee some efficiency or, I don't know, or universality or something like that?
Yeah, so in for certain like setups of the, you know, for certain constraints, you can guarantee that a neural network will be able to describe many data sets, so they are much more flexible than some of these other algorithms. We'll see, they're just, yeah, they're very powerful. They can represent a lot of sophisticated features that a lot of these algorithms can't. So we'll see examples where like these algorithms will fail and neural networks won't. But again, like there are definitely trade-offs. And if you have a very simple data set, it's very tempting to just start with the most sophisticated algorithm. But if you don't kind of like build up intuition for how those work, because they do have a lot of black boxness to them, right? That they're more difficult to interpret in the end, which we'll see in more detail. Again, it's not always the first step that you should take. Yeah. Do you guys want to tell me more about what you've seen about machine learning so far? Because you guys have a lot of I guess the points you've said even from the beginning show me that you've already used it in some settings. So I'm curious to hear more.
Yeah,